Hello, folks.
Hey.
I'd like to call the, June 15th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chop?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
It's the Robinson Roberts thing. Sometimes it throws me off.
I wasn't expecting to be first here.
I would like to ask for a brief executive session after tonight's meeting to talk about real estate negotiations and a personnel matter. A privilege of the floor for the public. We invite the public to speak. We have 3 minutes per person. Brian Zaff and then Doug Britton. Come to the mic and say where you're from. Hi, Brian.
Good evening. I'm Brian Zaff, and I'm here representing the Alternatives Federal Credit Union. And I just wanted to, first of all, thank the county legislature for their past support to give a brief review of what we do and why we do it, and also to thank the 80-plus volunteers who put in over 1,900 hours preparing returns for low-income folks here in the county. And that is what we do. It's a VITA site that's supported by the IRS. All of our volunteers go through hours of training in order to be certified by the IRS in order to be able to prepare returns for free for people. The number of people that we served this year was over 1,500 families who came to our site. As I said, the volunteers put in 1,900 hours to prepare returns for those folks. The bare numbers, we turned over $3.5 million in refunds to the community. We saved over $350,000, we estimate, in tax return preparation fees because we do it for free. The reason we do it for free, and the reason that we think it's important, is of that $3.5 million, over $2 million of that money was money that was not a refund per se, but was actually due to the earned income tax credit and the child tax credits that are specifically earmarked for low-income families to help support those families. And that $2 million would not have come into the community, would not be here, if people don't file the returns or don't file them properly. We work extra hours this year. We serve more people than ever. The only criteria that we have for coming to the site is an income limit. You don't have to be a member of the credit union. In fact, most of the people who come to see us and use our services are not members of the credit union. Demographic is we serve mostly females, mostly head of households, and that is kind of why we focus on the earned income tax credit. A couple other things I'd like to leave you with. We did expand our hours this year. The average adjusted gross income of the family adjusted gross income was $17,900. So we know that we're targeting people that really could use our services, that really shouldn't have to pay a whole lot of money to get their returns done in order to get the tax benefits that the that Congress and the IRS have made available. A couple of things that I like to point out. Of the people that we saw, 4% were retired, 45% are working full-time, 30% are working part-time, 14% are currently unemployed. And remember, these are people who are filing tax returns, and 14% of them are currently unemployed. 7% are other, which could be people that are
Wrap up.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, if anybody wants any further information, I can leave you just a brief sheet. And again, thank you for your time, attention, and your support.
Thank you, Brian. If you want to leave one sheet, we can make copies for everybody. Thank you. And Doug?
Hi, Doug Britton, 135 Warren Road. I'm sorry to see all of you inside on such a beautiful day. I wish you could hold these things
outside. Don't tempt us, Doug.
I'm here to talk about Hanshaw. I know the decision's been put off for a couple weeks, but I'm not sure that lets us all off the hook for 2 weeks. What I would request is that sometime within the next 2 weeks, if you find a residential neighborhood that has a roadway specification similar to what is being proposed for Hanshaw, go take a look at it, see what you think. One obvious example is Varna, Route 366. That's 32 feet of pavement as opposed to 30 feet, which is being considered, but it's pretty close. If you drive through Varna and 366, there are four things I think worth noticing. Number one, it's really tough to go 30 miles an hour. Number two, the pavement is big and wide, and it's smooth even beyond the travel lane. So if you're not paying attention and your steering is approximate, there are no consequences for wandering out of your travel lane. Three, the profile of the road, as it's called, has been smoothed out. So it doesn't really feel as if you're driving on the terrain. You're a little detached from it, sort of as if you're in a low-flying airplane or something. And then the fourth is the character has been pretty thoroughly expunged. It could almost, I mean, yes, there are houses, but it doesn't really feel like you're driving through a neighborhood. It could almost be a miracle mile that's still waiting for a miracle. If you park in the Varna Community Center, you can look at the road from a pedestrian's viewpoint, which is a good idea. There's no sidewalk, but you can cross the road. And it's actually pretty instructive just trying to cross 366. It's wide, obviously. It takes far longer to cross than you would expect. But it's also very difficult when you see a car coming because of a huge expanse of pavement to really know how far away is it, how fast is it was going. And it's much more awkward than you might imagine. So in any case, that's your homework assignment for the next 2 weeks, if you are willing. And if you would, I would appreciate it. And I think that's it. Except there is one other example I should perhaps mention, which is Pleasant Grove Road, the part within Cayuga Heights. Very nice. Goes up and down, left and right. Pedestrians right next to the road. As soon as you get to the part that's maintained by the county, pedestrians are off to the side. The road is big, and your sensation of speed just disappears. You open the door and see if the pavement's still moving by. It's very instructive just to go through that transition a few times. I think it's worth doing. That's all. Thank you. See you in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Anyone else? I don't see a municipal official. Okay, legislators? Anyone want to speak? Okay, then moving on. Dooley, Peter, Carroll. Leslie.
The Tompkins County League of Women Voters took a leading role recently at the National League of Women Voters Convention that was in Atlanta. Our county league had been working with leagues in Pennsylvania and also some leagues in the Midwest, and they took a resolution to this fairly staid organization to, it was not on the recommended agenda, but they took it and they got a lot of support from having caucus meetings during this other meeting, and they had the National League of Women Voters adopt a resolution in support of safe drilling and mining for energy resources. And it was really sponsored locally by the concern about hydrofracking. but it now means that leagues in every state in the union will be lobbying to have the exemption for mining activities removed from other federal legislation and similar kinds of issues. I just thought it was a great victory for our local league, and I wanted to mention that. That just happened this week.
Thank you, Julie. Peter?
I would like to put an item on the agenda, our agenda written broadly, something to think about. After 6 months on this county board, and naturally I make comparisons with the town board, which I had 6 years on, and one thing that I find different is this thing called privilege of the floor from legislators, which is something that we used only very infrequently on the town board. And I have come to believe that we ought to hold ourselves to the same time limits as we hold the public to. I think actually it's more important that we hear the public than that we hear each other. We have other means of communications with each other. The public doesn't have that. And so what I'd like to ask us to think about is whether we're willing to place the same limitations on access to the floor with the same time limitations as those of the public. Period. And I don't quite know how to do this, how to bring it up in a formal way to put it on our...
Your time's up.
Thank you. Glad you are watching.
Frank, to answer that?
The answer to that, Peter, is to have the chair reform the Rules Committee so we can review that as part of the three-year process that some of us went through, right? Dewey was the chair. And we can look at the rules again. And we have so much time with the budget coming up that we can do it then. But you'd have to review the rules.
There's been a lot of conversation about that, Dooley.
Well, it could also get referred to government operations.
Let's talk about it for about an hour.
I like Frank's suggestion.
All right, we won't make a decision now, but I've made a note of it, and we'll talk about it. All right, I've got Carol Leslie, and then Jim.
Hi, I wanted to report to you that that I was invited up to Syracuse today. I had the invitation yesterday, went up today. A group of young people starting a new group related to hydraulic fracturing put together a series of press conferences in front of six regional DEC offices related to a position that they'd like to see the New York State Legislature take related to the Adobo Engelbreit bill, which was going to the Environmental Conservation Committee of the Senate yesterday, and was invited because they wanted to hear what the Tompkins County Legislature and our departments have done. They were quite interested. There were only three or four speakers, and it went quite well. There should be press happening now that I'm not going to get to watch, but it was quite interesting to see sort of a younger new group. And I want to let you know that yesterday, so the Adobo Engelbreit bill that this legislature urged passage is still sitting in the Environmental Conservation Committee. Yesterday, that committee passed a milder bill, the Thompson-Sweeney bill, that would put a one-year moratorium on new hydrofracking permits. We will take that. It's a start. It at least acknowledges that we need to know more before New York State can complete all the regulations to keep us safe. And it does what the state is good at doing. It kicks the can about a year down the road. But it has made it out of that committee and will go to rules. Some of us also had a chance to see the movie I announced, one of us announced last time, Gasland. And I just wanted to let you know that it was a very good movie, the documentary that won an award at Sundance, and it will be shown on HBO, for those of you who get HBO, on June 21st. So if you are looking for some more input on this issue, and Peter, this is your homework, to learn a little bit more so that in the future you'll be able to take more of a stance with some more knowledge on this, I encourage you to watch this film. I also had a thought about just one of our procedures here, this relates to a way that we can be using technology effectively instead of sort of being subject to the dictates of technology, and that is the presentations that we receive, the 10-minute presentations. We've got one tonight. I would really like us to consider having the presenter, if there is material that we're going to be looking at on the screen, stand at the mic at the end of the room. I find it quite difficult. I like to look at people when they're presenting. It's more of a dynamic relationship between the presenter and the audience. And with people sitting here at the back of the room, essentially, as we're all facing the screen, there isn't that sense of a give and take. So I just like to have us consider. I believe that mic works, and it might be something we could consider for the future. So thank you.
We'll look at that, but you can see by looking at Mike Lane's face that we have some projector problems to deal with. You see, the light is...
We'll start looking at his on.
I might get a peculiar band-aid.
You can see the
start considering putting the screen on that end of the room.
That would work.
That's an avatar.
We'll see what we can do. Okay. Let me see what I've got. Leslie, Jim, Frank... Pam, did somebody else have a hand up?
I just want to make a quick announcement that this coming Saturday is the annual Southside Community Celebration of Juneteenth. For those of you who don't know, Juneteenth is the oldest known celebration of the final emancipation of slaves, some 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. The phrase Juneteenth was coined because word got to the slaves in Louisiana and Texas between the 13th and 19th, the final of them getting words on the 19th of June, hence the coin Juneteenth. So if you are not too busy, you have some free hands, want to volunteer some time, or just come on down and celebrate. It is happening from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. South Plain Street, just outside the Southside Community Center. Lots of exciting performances, rereading of the proclamation and General Granger's message, and a number of things going on. So I do invite you to join us, either to come volunteer or just come enjoy the day with folks at the Southside Community Center. That's my...
Leslie, don't you want to talk about that gorgeous GIAC building?
I started to, but I was going to talk about my time limit before that, since we're not discussing it. I do, like most of us, I think we use this opportunity to talk about the things that are happening in our district, to use the opportunity to highlight all the things that are going on that there normally isn't a place to make it happen. I'm not one who stays up on email quite a bit, so... I like hearing some of the reports that Carol has to bring back or others have to bring back, but it's a discussion that will happen all the time. And yes, this past Saturday was the open house for the gorgeous Greater Ithaca Activity Center building after almost a year of being dislocated. We're happy to be moving back. So you see I have rolled up sleeves. We've been packing and schlepping and doing all kinds of stuff, hoping to move back this week. There were many of you there, and we do appreciate you coming out and celebrating with us on Saturday. There's still work to be done, but we'll hopefully be moving in. And for the public's benefit, GIAC will not be open to the public until July 6th. Doesn't mean you can't take a sneak peek if you didn't have a chance to come to the open house. But we will be open to the public July 6th. So come on down. Hang out with us.
Thank you, Leslie. Jim.
Thank you, Martha. I just wanted to comment on the report that Brian gave.
And I didn't remember the dollar amount, but the county adds $9,500 to that, and they return $3 million. That pretty much is the kind of investment we should make all the time.
Thank you. Frank, then Pam, then Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of items. First, I wanted to, Mike, are you going to report on Dairy Days out in Dryden?
Go ahead, Frank.
Those of you that were able to attend, I don't want to steal your thunder, but it was very well attended, and I think Mike deserves a real pat on the back and a compliment. Mike has made, it's my understanding, every single one of the presentations regarding the dairy princesses in this county since he's been associated with the village and the town. And that's quite an undertaking. In this particular year, the dairy princess had the largest court they've ever had. There were 8 or 10 young ladies in that, and they go all over the state as representatives from our community. So I think you deserve a big thank you for your contribution to that, because it takes a lot of time. The other item regarding farming, you know, I usually pick on Jim with regard to NYSEG, but I have to tell him the story very quickly about what's known as the Envirothon. The county fields a number of teams from the high schools. These are young people who, and we honored one team that came here last year as a winner, a state winner. And they compete on environmental issues, farming issues, just general citizenship issues, and they compete against teams all across the state. And this year what happened was, and Pat, this is bad news for Lansing. Lansing was the high school team that was supposed to go to the state competition for us. And there was some glitch with the new principal or whatever, as I understand it, and they weren't able to pull the team together quickly enough. The number two team, which was Trumansburg, was able to go. And in one day, they were able to get up to speed on all the segments of the competition. And they went and scored pretty well. So we may want to have them come in and give us a little explanation of what they went through, but they received, there were something like 300 representatives at the dinner, and Trumansburg received a real pat on the back from other state organizations at that dinner in Syracuse. So you should be very pleased with your high school, Jim. They came through and did very well. And it's a good opportunity for us to recognize youth in the community. It really is. Next year, Pat. Lansing always does real well.
I'll have to check into that, Frank.
And my last item is just so budgets are coming up, and last year when we were into September, October, a question came up about what the heck was the Civil War Commission? Remember that? And some of us have been keeping abreast of that because Kathy and I are sort of the informal representatives to that body. I think it might be appropriate to have a presentation here, maybe as one of these presentations. Judge Sherman is the chair. Marty Lester used to be the chair until he moved to Massachusetts. But one of the programs that we've been putting together through that commission is to sponsor a scholarship at TC3 for the nursing program, because during the war between the states, a lot of the nurses, and Carol Kamen has done a wonderful job in publicizing some of this. The nurses are very underrepresented with regard to their participation in that war. And we want to sponsor a scholarship out of TC3 because that is our nursing program at our community college. So when you think it's appropriate, I'm sure Jack would probably accept an invitation to come and give us a little update on that.
if you want to have him contact Kathy and to look at the schedule, that's the most direct way to do it.
Okay, I can do that.
She just keeps a running a schedule for these meetings.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Sounds good. Pam and then Mike.
Well, I just wanted to remind people that the DOT is over at City Hall and Common Council Chambers talking about their proposed changes to reduce the amount of garbage transport traffic in the Finger Lakes region. If you don't live too far from City Hall, you still have an opportunity to get down there and hear what they are doing. I'm hoping after these things have become more clearly laid out in terms of what they're actually going to do a small presentation here in what we are likely to see.
Thank you, Pam. Mike.
Yes, Frank, thanks for the kind words. Dairy Day was wonderful this year, as usual. I think it's a bigger crowd. We had Montgomery Park filled with the vendors and displays, the most we ever had, over 70. People had a great time, and it celebrated the dairy industry in Tompkins County, which is a very important to our economic well-being here, and we're glad to do that in Dryden. We had over 50 decorated cows on the at Times Square in the middle of the village, and not one of them moved. They're something that's gone on for 2 years now. People really like those. On a serious note, it's now 11 weeks without a state budget, and now we're starting to hear the scary things starting to come out about cuts in social services and other things. Not a word about any cuts and mandates, of course, that would come along with those. So what we're likely to see is one more time where the state is going to reach into our pockets in the real property taxes locally through the back door by cutting off the monies that would come to us normally for state aid, but still requiring us to provide those services. We need to keep our guard up. We need to keep our legislatures apprised of the fact that shifting the burden is just not acceptable in these situations. Going without budgets in situations like this is scaring the financial markets. We're starting to hear a lot about questions about municipal bonds and the ratings and whether they're being overrated because there perhaps is more risk. We've had people like Warren Buffett out there questioning these. And even though we have a strong credit rating and we're not up to our eyeballs in debt, those kinds of things have a way of affecting all municipalities when the rating agencies become spooked. So we need to worry about those things.
Thank you, Mike. I would add that as the with these weekly budget extenders, to the extent that the governor is including in them items that are shaping the full year's budget, there's certainly no transparency. These things, we hear about them after they're already passed, and there's certainly no opportunity. I can't imagine legislators are discussing them. You know, the public's certainly not hearing about these issues. So thank you. Brian.
Just real quickly, and I'm going to yield the rest of my time to Frank if he needs it. But we too came off a.
I'll take it, Brian. I don't know what you want to talk about.
Came off a celebration. I want to thank the rest of the legislature. I did deliver the recognition certificate that was given to me at the last meeting. Very, very nice affair on Friday night in the opening of it. And there was representation from Congressman Arcuri's office and Assemblywoman Lifton was there. And I was proud to be able to represent this board at it. And I might tell you that there were mayors present from, I didn't even know them, some of them. They were pretty old. Back in the 60s and so forth, but real time to celebrate and to learn a lot more history than I knew about in our village. And again, I just wanted to thank you. And I'll yield.
Thanks.
Thank you. Be careful about saying the 60s was so old.
Yeah. Can I take that back?
The record will show. All right. Anyone else? All right. Thank you all. Gary, whether you want to come up or back, or I don't know, how does this work?
Well, they extended the mic here and then this here, so I will try it from back here.
Excellent.
Let's see if it works.
Gary Ferguson, director of the Downtown Ithaca Alliance. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I am going to sprint you through a really abridged version that summarizes the 2020 draft strategic plan for downtown Ithaca. You have two different items that I think are in your packet. One is an executive summary, and that is a really short version of the prolonged document. The other one is I just put together sort of a crib sheet that has key concepts that might be of interest to you as county legislators about some of the ideas that are in this plan. This is in a draft stage. It's in the process of being rewritten right now, and the intent will be that it will be passed by the Downtown Alliance later on this summer, and then we'll go to the City of Ithaca for its vote and for eventual inclusion in the comprehensive plan. But let's walk through it, and the best way to do that would be in a summary version, is to take a look. I will show you pictorially, I think, where we'd like to go and what the future is likely to hold for our downtown. First of all, I think the context is this is what I would call a mature downtown. It is not like Phoenix. It is not like Charlotte. It is not like the places that have masses of open space and lots of parking lots that dot the landscape. This is a tight urban area. And one of the real questions we had was, how much more growth can you squeeze into a little place like this? Legitimate question. The public asked that question, and we spent some time trying to figure it out. We actually had folks from Cornell University, from the Public Administration Grad School, do some work for us to look at that. Their determination was up to 1.3 million square feet of additional development could go into downtown under current zoning. Really using the whole idea of infill development. What you see here is an illustrative picture of what such an infill development may look like. I caution you, a number of people have looked at these and said, all your buildings are white. Those are the ugliest buildings I've ever seen. These are meant as placeholders. They help you sort of understand the massing and the context of what a building could be. For example, that one is at the end of Bank Alley. You're standing up, looking out of Starbucks, looking across the street at the Commons. And it's an example of how you can take a parking lot, which is a low-use area, which is now a Bank of America drive-thru and parking lot area, and actually develop an infill building there. We identified a number of sites, approximately 12 sites that were predominantly parking, little parking areas scattered throughout the downtown area, and then also another 15 or so development sites that I would call underutilized. These are one-story, sometimes two-story properties, and you'll see some examples of these later on, that really could be redeveloped into something bigger and better. And so I think the general notion was what looked like a very tight area really has at least 25 or more different opportunities for development if, in fact, we want to go in that direction. Some examples. And one of the things we talk about is in our plan is the notion that downtown butts up against a number of neighborhoods. I mean, the neighborhood relationship to the center city is really important. And so the transition zones become really crucial. One key aspect of that is how you might taper or design buildings so that they, as they get closer to the actual residential neighborhoods, they're at a lower scale than they might be, and then they're in the downtown proper. And there's a good example of such an idea. And this is right across from Pritchard. The idea of infill development, this is right here on the Commons itself. I mean, that's fundamental and crucial to our whole notion of how we would develop over the next 10 years. It's really taking the context and the character that we have now and filling it in. Great example of a project that we're trying to make happen even now on the Commons. That's the Night and Day site right in the center of the Commons. The key is ensuring that the sites have proper zoning, And then I think illustrating to the public and to the community how these projects actually fit in. And that's an important concept, one that was talked about last night when we were talking about nodal development countywide. You really need illustrations, I think, to help people understand. Here are a few more illustrations. We have a number of them that we commissioned to show how infill development can work in our center city. Both of these are on Green Street. One is, that's the Ithaca Journal site. As you know, the Ithaca Journal had moved its printing presses out of the community. Well, that space is actually vacant. It's perfect opportunity for reuse. Good example. This is a good case in point. I talked about underutilized spaces that could do better in terms of using their zoning envelope more. This is the Tree Block site. It is next to the Commons. You probably all know where that is. We are actually suggesting, as part of a zoning package we have in our plan, that we actually upzone that slightly. But again, that's not something that people are taking pictures of and sending them to their relatives, you know, in other states saying, look at how beautiful we are. But maybe that is. That's an example of infilling with the new hotel and with a proposed building on that site. That actually returns the character of downtown closer to what it was 50 to 100 years ago. If someone from 50 to 100 years ago were to stand there, they would not be surprised looking at that. That looks more to the scale of what our community used to look like. A couple key ideas. We have probably 200 or more different ideas in this 2020 plan. Some of the bigger ones and more exciting ones. Not only do we want to see the Commons redone, we're actually looking at the ways that we can expand the pedestrian scale and nature of the Commons to surrounding blocks, such as this block here on West State Street in front of the State Theater. Certainly adding more retail. It is very important that downtown continue to be a retail destination. We have a market study that shows that 90,000 new square feet can be absorbed in downtown. That would bring us up to 390,000. As you can see, the comparisons with the rest of the other key retail destinations in our county, downtown needs to do that if it wants to be considered a viable retail alternative. In the area of housing, really important to us all, housing is a key driver of downtown and a key driver, of the future of downtown. We have determined that we can add at least another 500 additional units of housing. This is the proposed project that we hope to have take off this year that Sean Bloomfield would be doing in back of the Cougar Garage. This is a project that INHS is waiting for hopefully tax credit funding for at the corner of Cayuga and Seneca. We're also looking at the notion of adding more square footage of office space. We want downtown to be the office center of the region, and not just for the volume, but also for the employees that come with it. Certainly one of the key things that we talked about, and we've already started this dialogue and discussion with the county and with the city, is the notion that a lot of this development could be institutional in nature. And one very interesting thing to consider is the notion that a joint city-county downtown administrative office building, both entities in need of doing something, probably during this 2020 period, and something worth looking at. Building out some of our infrastructure, certainly working on the 6 Mile Creek Trail and Walk. This is a tremendous opportunity, not just for tourism, but also for the local community. This would be a great way to actually reach out into the neighborhoods and to reach out beyond the neighborhoods into the natural areas. Tourism is critically important to the health and vitality and the economy of our region, but particularly for downtown. And we're looking to add at least one more additional downtown hotel. That is the hotel we've been working on now for several years that Jeff Remlin has been trying to bring to fruition. We're also looking at the idea of a new downtown multi-use meeting center that could not only be used for local use, but also could be used for conferencing and out of area use as well. One idea that we'd like to pursue further is this notion of a university community downtown welcome center. This is one in Charlottesville, Virginia that we saw that was done. We've seen some great ones done in State College, Pennsylvania as well. This idea that combines a university center and a welcome center with something that our community tourism would do as well. It's a joint project that really, I think, could be an attraction all in itself. Transportation is really crucial. If we're going to develop like we'd like to develop in downtown, to do this infill, to add this new density, a lot of it's going to happen on parking lots. How are you going to replace the parking? Well, you're going to have a commitment to alternative transportation, and it's going to have to be real, and it's going to have to be substantial. One of the things that's definitely we're going to take a look at is the idea of increasing shuttle service, or creating shuttle service to Ithaca College. There is none now. Ithaca College, it's one of the most demanded things, asked for things that students from Ithaca College have asked for as part of our research in preparing for this plan. Connecting to East Hill from downtown, again, is a very crucial thing. And finding a more efficient, a better way to do that, we would like to revisit this idea of fixed rail trolley linking College Town and Cornell with downtown. Whether it be the trolley or some other alternative transit form that improves that linkage between downtown and the hill. One of the things that's significantly different about what we're talking about, this is our second strategic plan that we've put together. I would say in the first one, it was very insular. Our job was to make downtown a better place and try to do it as best we can. I think what we're saying this time around is to really be successful, we got to connect and collaborate with others. Other districts within the city, other villages, other hamlets within the county. It's that connecting and collaborating is absolutely essential if we're going to be successful. One of the things that clearly we need to do, and we heard it loud and clear from the community, I think the community is interested in more density for downtown. They believe it. They want it done within the character of our community. So the idea of enacting some sort of downtown design guidelines to ensure not only the historic integrity of our community remains, but also that walkability and the retail character of the street is preserved as well. This is a process that's going on. We're looking for, the redrafting is happening right now, and we'll be approving this later on this summer, and the council will be having it for their review later on this fall. So that is a really quick overview. I encourage you to go to our website where you can get a full copy of the draft, and really within a few weeks, there'll be a whole new final version of it out, and eventually you all get copies of it.
Thank you very much, Gary.
You're welcome.
That's great. Any questions? Frank.
Gary, nice job. But I have a question about the... can you put that slide back up that has the Welcome Center, the university, mm-hmm. downtown one a second? I just have a question for you about that.
Yes.
With Ithaca College having been located in the center of the city, and that was home base for them, is there any reason why they can't be part of this?
Oh, absolutely. I would assume they would. I would want at least the two and probably the three institutions to be engaged.
CC3 as well.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. These are phenomenal ideas. If you have the opportunity, go to a college community and see if they have one. State College, like we said, has a very nice one. They happen to put it out by their football stadium. I would have put it somewhere else. But this one's right downtown, for example. But it's a combination visitor center and almost museum. It highlights the region, and it also highlights the university. So you could go there and learn about the university, about higher education, what it has to offer. It's sort of a point of entry, not only for visitors, but also for people coming to the higher the educational institutions as well.
The area that you described with the new hotel, and there was a building across the road from it, it's the Aurora Street corridor. Is there a proposal to put a Zinks in there? Because I know Jim Dennis, he's one of the people that remember that as the corridor you're describing. And he's told me about the time he spent at Zinks.
What year was that?
'03.
Dooley.
Maybe. Dooley lost the train of thought.
Gary, when you mentioned the hotel and making the bustling urban downtown return to what it used to be 100 years ago, yes, there's truth in that, but the scale was so different. It wasn't so many stories. And I don't mind you invoking 100 years ago, but it doesn't feel the same as when you have so many stories. What I wanted to say was I still don't see any recognition of the desirability of having greenery downtown, yeah. Pocket parks. I made that comment the very first time I saw this presentation, and there still seems to be nothing mentioned. Maybe the students didn't mention it, but I think that that's an important thing that you shouldn't lose sight of for downtown.
Yeah, actually, yeah, since you mentioned that, it was mentioned in several other community forums where we've had this as well. It is part, we're trying to, in the redraft that we're doing, that we will be trying to address that in some way, shape, or form. We didn't have time to talk about it here. But, yeah, it's an interesting issue, and one I think we are fascinated with. And it's not an easy one either, because there's not a lot of room, yet that desire to have green space and have green in the urban core is real. And so I think we're taking it very seriously.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Carol.
Along the lines of the university community welcome center, I'd just like us not to leave out ways in which the downtown of Ithaca serves as a welcome center and point of focus for our entire county, and to find ways that as we think about downtown, that it find ways to bring our urbanized, we had a discussion about this last night, what does urbanized mean, and with the relationship between the central city and our other urbanized areas and our other rural areas, and to find ways to make sure that community people and visitors who come know what else the county has to offer.
Good point. Two
it's
quick
not
points
either
to that.
Or.
Yeah, one was that the study that was just done by the CVB really illustrated the importance of downtown for the regional and really upstate tourism purposes. Downtown is clearly seen as one of the key, as other than gorges and waterfalls, really the key thing that people want to come and partake in. The other thing I think that's really important is that when we had this notion when we started one of our the research was that if we could build enough stuff in downtown, we wouldn't have to worry about anybody else. If we could load enough housing in downtown, if we could load enough office space in downtown, everything else could kind of go along in its own way, and we could be successful. That was not correct. We could never build enough. We couldn't build it high enough. We just couldn't do it. Downtown success relies, and it was proven, on regional. In people coming in from the regions to partake of the center, from our county, from our market area. Absent that, it would not work.
And vice versa.
Oh, absolutely.
Anyone else? Thank you very much, Gary.
Absolutely.
That's great. I really appreciate your coming down and talking to us. For my report, a couple of things to... I'm glad that you talked a little bit about GIEC last time. It was, it's really a beautiful redesign of that building, and I was really pleased to see it and glad that that was funded by the IURA and the City of Ithaca, and it will certainly be a community center for the broader community as well as the city. To add to the things that Carol said about gas drilling, it is really quite amazing that we are that there is as much momentum as there is for a moratorium on drilling, and there are two bills, as Carol said, one for 1 year and one for a moratorium tied to the EPA study. And I think the residents of Tompkins County have had a great deal to do with the lobbying that's gotten us as far as we've been. I was in New York City at a Sierra Club press conference on Friday, and then talking about drilling and talking about specifically about the Adabo bill, the two-year the EPA moratorium, and then again at the Saturday rally and events with the on the commons here tied to around the Gasland movie. And I think this is something that our
residents really recognize as very fundamental to the future of our county and our whole region. I would just like to thank folks for flexibility in being able to schedule the June 30th special meeting of the legislature. That'll be that's a Wednesday, right? Wednesday, June 30th, to take action on the findings related to Hanshaw Road, the Hanshaw Road project. And staff is going to be bringing information to us, and I think that'll be a good time to have a full discussion of the findings and the project. So thank you very much for being willing to put another meeting on your calendars. So that's all I have. County Administrator Joe.
Thanks, Martha. I just have a couple of items in my report tonight. Most of those are just updates on some of the old chestnuts. Mike Lane and Frank both talked about state budget. I really don't have much to add other than what you see in the newspaper about the status of that budget. There's plenty of areas of concern in the extenders that we've seen that relate to human service departments, and we're going through those as quickly as we can to get a very precise estimate of what it will mean to us and the programs that we deliver. It's going to take a little time because of the complexity of those services, and trying to go from large state numbers to how it affects us takes a little time. I will tell you, and you know, I'm so often the bearer of bad news, and whenever there's a little nugget of good news, I'm anxious to report it. In these extenders, there are a couple of bits of good news. One is that the CHIPS program, which funds highway improvements in our county and other local governments, was fully funded as a part of these extenders. So there is good news that we're going to be able to get underway with projects supported with those state highway improvement dollars. And that's a very good thing. We've waited until we've known if the money's going to come before we go to green, and we're at that point now. The other thing, and this really is over the last 24 hours, we're learning about money for summer youth employment. There is some money in the state budget and one of the extenders for summer youth employment. It looks like we will get someplace in the neighborhood of $160,000. That's enough to support someplace in the neighborhood of 90 to 100 summer jobs, which is good because until 24 hours ago, it looked pretty bleak in terms of what we could do. So the providers of those services have been working on contingency plans in case money arrived. So the good news is it looks like there is going to be some money in that area. With respect to our own budget, a little closer to home, it seems like the moment we ended the last budget, we started to talk about the 2011 budget. As a part of the 2011 budget, we talked about looking at an inventory of our programs and an assessment of each of those programs. And that process is now coming to closure. And it's not been an easy process, but as a result of the activities that have occurred over the past several months, we will not only have this year our traditional line item budget that talks about and tells about what we spend, we will have a program inventory and an assessment of our programs that will talk about what we do. And we will be able to link those two things in a very precise, carefully calibrated way. I think you've seen samples of the way the format's going to look. We're doing a little quality control work right now to make a couple of tweaks in there. But I do want to thank everybody who's been involved in that, the legislature for giving guidance on the framework, but also department heads and staffs that have spent a lot of time to get this initial document done. From here on out, I think this is going to be a great guide for us, and it will be fairly easy to maintain. But putting it together for the first time has been a tremendous effort, and a lot of people were involved, and I really do appreciate the work that was done on that front. The last item on my report tonight relates to broadband. Some interesting developments on that front in the area of public safety broadband. You may recall that some months ago, even been longer than that, our county joined with NYSAC in trying to bundle a lot of public safety broadband initiatives throughout New York State that relate to interoperable communications and try to use that to get some stimulus money, federal stimulus money, into broadband public safety communications. And it didn't get very far. NYSAC didn't give up on that, nor did we. It looks like there is now a greater opportunity for some federal stimulus money that might come to New York State to support broadband public safety communication. Some information was requested of us I think we had 48 hours to put it together. We did that, so information is going to the federal government to back up that request for stimulus dollars. Paula, Lee Shurtleff, and Greg have done an incredible job pulling all this together. So if that comes to pass, the idea of a statewide network of networks, interoperable communications with counties like ours joining with other counties to put together a statewide plan gets a little closer to reality. And from a more parochial perspective, it might bring some dollars to us to help kind of advance what we've done in public safety communications and broadband generally. So just wanted to post you on that development, which popped up over the last week and which we are pursuing very aggressively. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Joe. Any questions? County Attorney Jonathan.
Just one short update. A couple meetings ago, as you probably recall, the legislature approved the Lakeside bankruptcy settlement. I reported at that time, I think, that we received a grant for $372,000. And today we got the check for the remaining $338,558. So it's more than just paperwork. That's my report.
That's great news. Thank you, Jonathan. And there's a, within your packets, there's a memo on cases that are ongoing. So I presume there's no report from the finance director?
Tonight is the auction, so he's coordinating.
All right. Resolutions to be added to and withdrawn from the agenda. Jim?
Thank you. I would like to, it was in your folder, resolution number H, not on the agenda, rescission of resolution 84 of 2010, endorsement of the legislative bills. You can read the numbers. It's the mortgage tax recording, the mortgage recording tax on obligations secured by a mortgage and real property.
Second by Kathy. Okay. Any questions? All in favor of adding this? Needs 10 votes. Please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Anything else? Frank.
Madam Chair, two resolutions to add. Resolution I, in appreciation of retiring Public Health Director Alice Cole.
All right. Is there a second? Pam? Any questions? Would you like to...
Can I add my second one?
Yes,
first?
Add your second one. Yes.
Please. The second is resolution J, request regarding delays in release of quarterly statewide mass transit operating assistance payments from the state of New York.
Second on that one, Pam. Any questions? All right. Well, let's take the... retiring public health director. What? We didn't vote on that. That's right. All right. All in favor of adding that to the agenda? Any opposed? All right. That's added. And the transit operating assistance payments. All in favor of adding that to the agenda? Any opposed? All right. Frank, would you like to take that? Let's have the public health director right now. So it's not just sort of stuck at the end of the meeting. I was hoping perhaps you could, because we understand that Alice Cole sometimes watches these.
She's probably making notes and going to correct some of this.
Okay, so I've invited Frank to read the entire resolution. So, and now I would say that there will be a special occasion on Friday night to celebrate Alice's career, and many of us will be there Friday night, but this is an appropriate time publicly to thank Alice. So go for it.
Thank you, Martha. In appreciation of retiring Public Health Director Alice Cole, and I think we have to move this, though.
Yes.
Okay. Whereas Alice Cole began working for Tompkins County as a supervising public health nurse in 1989, was promoted to Director of Patient Services in 1991, and promoted to Public Health Director on July 13, 1993, and whereas under Alice's guidance and management, the department addressed and developed plans and programs to meet requirements for preparedness planning, including most recently the H1N1 pandemic, and where Alice developed, supported, and provided effective leadership in many areas, including a needle exchange program, bloodborne pathogen policy and training, preventive dental health initiative with the Department of Social Services, interagency work with primary schools and colleges, the Health Planning Council, Cayuga Medical Center, and other community organizations. And whereas Alice has been a powerful educator and advocate about public health services, emerging critical issues, and essential funding needs in the community. Whereas Alice is known and respected for her leadership, passion for public health, and encouraging staff to seek creative ways to provide service while maintaining efficiency, effectiveness, and high standards of public service to the community. And whereas Alice is a lifelong resident of Tompkins County with over 35 years of nursing experience, with 21 of those years with the Tompkins County Health Department. Now therefore be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature recognizes on the occasion of her retirement the many significant contributions Alice has made to promote, protect, and improve the health of the people of Tompkins County, consistent with public health law. And further resolve further that the Tompkins County Legislature extends its sincere appreciation and best wishes for a healthy and happy retirement to Alice on this well-deserved occasion.
That's so moved.
I'd like to move that.
Thank you. How about a unanimous second? Yeah. All right. Any discussion? All in favor of the resolution? Please raise your hand.
Can
Any opposed?
One tagline,
Frank.
We had to limit this to one page. And I will probably say this again Friday night. And Alice probably is watching, and I'm surprised the phone isn't ringing because she's probably going to correct some of this. But the Brenda had quite a bit to do with helping. Brenda and I put this together with some help from some of you. And there wasn't enough room on the page to put everything down, so I apologize, and I'll apologize for Brenda as well. But this is a tough one, let me tell you, to do for retirement. I hope you're all coming Friday night. We'll have a good time.
No apology needed. Thank you very much for putting this together. And yes, we'll definitely miss Alice. So, but she's not quite gone yet. So, thank you very much for doing that, Frank.
All in favor?
And now we voted. Yeah. All right, is there anything else to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, the consent agenda is resolutions and appointments that are considered non-controversial. So we only have one resolution, Resolution A, authorization for public hearing, Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget 2010-2011. Kathy moves, and is there a second? Will. What am I doing? Appointments. I'm sorry. And appointments. Before we have the motion in a second, appointments are Willard Tickner Dates to the Ethics Advisory Board, Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Jamaica Breedlove and Anita Fitzpatrick, and Patricia Van de Bogart to the Tompkins County Youth Services Board. So now, motion and second. Kathy and a second, Dooley. All right. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. Those are unanimous. So, Budget and Capital Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. The item I added to the agenda, rescission of Resolution Number 84 of 2010, endorsement of legislative bills, Senate 7652A and Assembly 101-227A, authorizing a 25-cent per $100 mortgage recording tax on obligation secured by a mortgage on real property. And I would move that.
Is there a second? Dooley seconds. Discussion.
I would let Joe do this. We talked about it at the budget meeting the other day, and Joe has a really good, simple explanation of why we had to do this.
But remember, we're on camera.
Okay. You may have a sense of deja vu because you approved something similar to this 2 weeks ago. The bill drafters in Albany sent us language last time that we then sent back to them as a home rule resolution saying this is what we like. We're okay with this. Once we sent that home rule resolution that you approved 2 weeks ago back to Albany, the bill drafters recognized that they left something out of that bill that they have put into every other bill for the mortgage recording tax, and that is a sunset provision where state authorization would sunset on December 1st, 2013. That wasn't a part of the original bill language that came to us, and it was in the home rule resolution last time. So they've sent it back to us. It does now have that sunset provision in it. It doesn't mean that it would necessarily terminate after that period of time, but we will, much like that extra 1% on the sales tax, we have to get renewed every 2 years. This would have to go back to the state for a reconsideration of its authorization again in December of 2013. So that's the one change. And I guess kind of the punctuation mark on this, time is of the essence. We believe the legislature wants to go home soon, as early as the end of this week. So if this is approved tonight, this will go into a FedEx pouch tomorrow morning. We will fax it tonight so that the state can consider this before the legislature adjourns as early as the end of this week.
That's the polite version. So yeah. any questions or comments? Kathy?
It'll come as no surprise to my colleagues that I hate adding resolutions to the agenda. Tonight we have an interesting perfect storm of three different reasons that I'm willing to accept. The first one is a confidential resolution to praise a departing staff member. The second is when the state, I won't be quite so polite, messes up really bad, I could say it worse, and we have to correct something they did. And the third is when there's a time constraint and we're begging for funding, which is what the third resolution that we added to the agenda tonight is. So I agreed to support adding these, and I'm going to agree to support all of them. The reasons I'll be supporting the mortgage tax I expressed last week, but basically it's because we worked it into the budget. It's tough times. We need it. And we can sunset this, or it is sunsetted at the state level, and we would have to reauthorize it.
Anyone else? Ready to vote? All in favor of this resolution H? Please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Two opposed. That's we're all here. That's 13-2. It passes. That's your report?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not exactly. We had a report yesterday from President TC3 talking about his budget. We will, at the next budget committee meeting at the end of June, we will be acting. We will be sending to the legislature for the July 6th meeting the Tompkins Community College budget for your approval. And that is the end of my report.
Thank you, Jim. Nathan Shinigawa, Public Safety Committee.
Thank you very much, Martha. The Public Safety Committee committee met last Monday, and we have no resolutions, but we did have a few items. The first was that we had a report from assigned counsel that Martha, you actually were mostly the person presenting about at the time, and the report was basically on the utilization of assigned counsel by college students and high schoolers. And we found that the bulk of the cases were utilization of assigned counsel by high schoolers, and that the amounts of assigned counsel used by Cornell students and Ithaca College students respectively, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was under $20,000 a year, but probably even much smaller than that. And so it was found that the committee decided that, and the assigned counsel representatives decided that it wasn't as big of a problem that they thought it was, and therefore will not be pressing the issue for the current foreseeable future. Second thing is that we had a presentation from Dr. Theodore Thiem, who is the chief of the occupational health and safety department at Guthrie Health. Who I asked the committee if they would be interested in having him speak, despite my work at Guthrie, and I asked if there would be a conflict, and people have said that no, it was fine, especially because of his unique background heading up this occupational safety practice at Guthrie, which is a large practice. There's like it's a practice of five individuals out of like 1,000 occupational safety doctors in the country. So, and Dr. Thiem, Dr. Theodore Thiem, actually lived in Wyoming and Texas in two natural gas companies beforehand, and also was a chemist that worked with natural gas companies for 8 years as well, prior to getting into medicine. So he had a very unique perspective. Talked mostly about giving a background about natural gas. I think that all of us here, for many of us, it was a refresher course because we've heard so much and learned so much about natural gas and hydraulic fracturing already. But he did have very many very interesting, pointed things to say about the social and public safety implications of natural gas drilling. Basically, he did not discount the chemical and environmental concerns that we have, but he did not focus on that in his discussion. His discussion was simply on how natural gas will mean, with this the natural gas industry coming, we will have a greater frequency of things that we already know how to handle, but it'll be bigger and possibly bigger in scope. So what do I mean by that? I mean increased traffic. And what comes with increased traffic is traffic accidents. But these traffic accidents aren't going to be garbage trucks that are going to be turning over, but trucks potentially filled with chemicals, with large sums of water, etc., that our local crews may not be able to handle. But we do have the capability. We just need to bolster things like our hazmat teams. We have to continue to do more training on dealing with large disasters like that, because the frequency may go up. But it's not something that we're totally unprepared for. He did also talk about social implications when it came to crimes that we'd have to be concerned about. Very interesting things that I didn't think about before. There's with a population of workers that will be coming that will be far away from their families, that are 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off is the way that the workers will be working. That's 2 weeks of recreation time. And which presents like any population that has expendable income and family far away, that issues that may come about with that. And it was little things like there were big things, of course, drugs and alcohol, but little things like poaching, for example. And he was talking about how there was a bridge, and how there were a bunch of guys dressed in the typical wear of the natural gas drill employees, and they were just fishing without a license. He asked them if they had a license. They didn't have a license, but they were just fishing without a license. Those type of things happen in greater frequency. But also, when you have with natural gas comes a population of people that are growing richer faster. So people that never had money before that suddenly have money because their properties are being drilled on. And so so in communities in Wyoming and in Texas, scam artists have come into the community to scam those individuals that have suddenly acquired large sums of money. And that's something that we would have to consider here, especially with say elderly populations and whatnot too, that are especially susceptible to those to that type of crime. And so it was a very interesting presentation. I know Chairman Frank Proto for Health and Human Services had asked for a similar presentation to take place, and I've asked Dr. Thiem if he'd be willing to do that, and he is. And so we may have another presentation soon so that you can have a repeat if you aren't able to catch the first one. And overall, very interesting. The press about it it took many different angles, and I got a lot of heat for it for asking Dr. Thiem to speak, but also a lot of praise, depending on the newspaper article that people that people read. But I guess that means that it was fairly well balanced.
Yeah. Thank you, Nathan. Jim.
A significant thing for me during that discussion was the fact that in the area in Bradford County where property values were nil, property values rent has gone through the roof. And we live in a county where there's already a shortage of affordable housing. If in fact that happens, one can only imagine what the result of that might be. So we have to be aware of that item also.
Yeah, and school overcrowding as well too, with population growth. That's true. And in fact, I was talking to a staff person that works at Guthrie just recently, and she's trying to buy a house. And before, about a year ago, I mean, you tried to buy a house in Waverly and or in Sayre, and there was an abundance of affordable places to go. She's still looking. She can't find anything because it's being occupied by workers. So.
And the complication is it's a relatively short term. These aren't permanent residents, long enough to take up the housing, but
yeah.
But then they leave. So.
Right.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah. And what is interesting too, I want to just add, is that there is an opportunity. I mean, it's I know it's tricky because we, you know, I and the legislature overall, we asked for, you know, we've taken a very strong position against hydraulic fracturing until there's further study of its environmental and other impacts. But we should still explore working with the natural gas companies for training exercises about the type of disasters that could take place, because that has happened. I forget which energy company it was, but they did run a disaster of an overturned truck. They brought in consultants and they actually hired actors, paid for the ambulance crews to work for the day, and brought in patients into the hospitals and whatnot. Hazmat teams worked, to simulate what would happen in this type of disaster. And I think leveraging funds not only from the federal and state government, but also from these companies to prepare for the worst that could happen, is worthwhile for us all to do, no matter what our position is.
Carol?
Yeah, one of the things that we've learned along the way in listening to a visitor from the Soil and Water Conservation District in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, and I'll talk more about soil and water later tonight, but the expenses, the direct expenses to Bradford County, the county itself, from their own budget, in 3 years went up, related to gas drilling, from $7,000 for the year to $300,000+ for the year. Most of that for public safety, which is why I thought of it in relation to your report, and assessment. And that's an area that we haven't thought to be looking at yet. But that's expenses to date. And they are rising exponentially.
Yeah, sure.
So it's something we'll have to think about.
Yep, thank you.
Frank?
Yeah, I'm glad Carol brought that up, because as Nathan said, some of these changes are temporary while the initial influx takes place. So with Carol's background on the Tourism Advisory Board, perhaps those individuals that are here temporarily could be classed as tourists, and we could tap the tourism money for helping the county out. What do you think, Nick?
I think it's an interesting idea, Frank, and I think that your jovial attitude today is probably being encouraged by the fact it's only 6:50 and we're already this far ahead in our agenda. So
this is an exponential. We have to keep that in mind.
It doesn't mean we have to use up more time.
Yes.
But anything else for Nathan?
No, I might have to close my report. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Nathan. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Just because Nathan said that, I'm going to try and make up something. WDIC will meet on the 23rd, which is next Wednesday. But I do want, on behalf of WDIC, encourage all of you who have been hiding and not responding to your email about the Dragon Boat Festival.
My
expectation, yes, Nathan.
Yes, sorry.
You did not respond. Call y'all out by names. My expectation is that, or our expectation as WDIC, is that we will have a full contingent of paddlers on the boat. Carol, I was looking
at
you. It's okay. You can spill water on other folks. And if you are not able to paddle for whatever reason, feel free to donate towards someone else paddling. It is $30, I think, and we are welcoming all of it so that we can really have a good showing on the boat. We need to represent Tompkins County as an employer and as a place where we value our diversity, our culture, our multiculturalism. So let's get on out there. I will be head cheerleader if anybody wants to join the cheerleading squad. I will be on the sidelines with pom-poms, I promise you, cheering.
Not the cheerleading outfit, but with pom-poms. Cheering. So feel free, what are you laughing at, Dave, to join me. So please, please help support our county team paddling in the Dragon Boat. This is our fifth year they're doing it at Tompkins County. Time flies, and it's a big deal. So please join us.
Pamela and Julie.
Is it acceptable to have a spouse replace?
Yes.
Okay.
And the spouse's friend. Spouse's friend, as long as they are willing to wear the Tompkins County logo across their shoulder and carry the dragon when we get it back.
Yes, ringers are accepted. There's probably some minimum number that we need. We need to be...
We need 20 paddlers, 18 or over. And we do accept family members. So.
Okay, 20 paddlers, 18 or over. We have about 6 right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yours truly included in that number, and others have also given some sponsorships as well. And thanks to Sarah Reistat for helping to cheerlead and sign people up. So, I got Dooley and then Frank.
Leslie, did you say when it was?
It's July 10th. It's July 10th.
And we need sign-ups by July.
Park.
Yeah, we need sign-ups by July 30th, June 30th.
Is there any intention of holding practices this year?
We certainly can if we have people together. You can always go out. We can always organize to get out on the boat for practice. There's lots of people practicing out there already gunning for us. I've been yelling at them like we're coming after you also. Yes, we can do that.
And lastly, you referenced the missing dragon. Do you have some clue about where it is?
I'm working on it.
Oh.
Yeah, I am. I'm going to find that dragon.
Yeah.
Good. And Liz Norton. Liz Norton from DSS is actually an experienced. She's really good.
Oh, yeah.
She's a PI.
No.
Oh, okay. Paddler. I don't know.
Paddler. Oh,
paddler.
Okay.
She's going to guide our team. She'll do our drumming and keep us in shape, and I think she will run a practice for us if we get ourselves together. So we're really talking about very shortly. The sign-up is by June 30th, and Karen is handling all those sign-ups. If you have any questions, just email her or call her. And we would love to set up a practice. So. Frank.
And you will tell us the exact time of the race, the practices, and the cheerleading practices?
Right.
Michelle
Potteroff should probably be the cheerleading coach, the coach for the cheerleading squad. So.
She's knocking my cheerleading skills.
Lesson, some of us are not, we're over 35. And some of you are under 35 for paddling. I mean, will the county provide a wellness exam so that we know?
Talk to the chair.
The chair?
Of the legislature.
Of the Health and Human Services.
Yeah, the Health and Human Services should do this. All right. Thanks very much, Leslie. Really got to get a good team together. Okay, thank you. Health and Human Services, Frank Proto, chair.
Those exams will be held in the back of this room. Thank you, Martha. We had our meeting on June 9th, and as Nate has already reported, there were a number of items that we did discuss. We had several of the resolutions on tonight's agenda were on the committee's agenda. I won't describe those until they come up. But there was discussion again about the Board of Health's bylaws. You notice that we have been, you'll remember that we've been working with some changes since earlier this year. And it's my understanding that the changes that the latest version that Dooley wanted to submit will be going to the Board of Health for their review next month and then come back to the Health Committee. Hopefully we'll then be presenting them to this body by July or August. The highlights of the meeting, I mean, of course, we discussed the status of the health department building, And my understanding there is that the occupancy is the early part of July. It's scheduled for around July 19th. And my guess there is, too, that there'll be a public opening of that. We had a slight update on the public health director's search. One of the item that's causing a little bit of delay there, just so you know, is that with a couple of the applicants, we're down to three. The credentialing, because they are in and out of the country, it's taken a little longer to finalize some of the verifications, and there's no surreptitious reason other than that. It's just simply taken longer than anybody expected. The Nate has already reported on Dr. Thiem. We're looking forward to that presentation because so much of what he talked about relates to our several of our county departments. The budget, of course, was on everybody's mind. And another meeting of the human service group, the review group that Martha was kind enough to pull together, is scheduled for later this month.
June 30th at 2 o'clock.
Thank you. To review some of the impacts of what the state is dumping on all of us, I'm afraid. We also had an opportunity to sit down with, you know, this is budget time, and everybody is concerned about numbers. And with some of the departments and some of the agencies, we had a chance to meet with Ken Slaughter at Cooperative Extension just to get a feel for what some of the proposed changes, and they are proposed, how they might affect Cooperative Extension. Nothing carved in stone. There's nothing even written in the sand at this point. So we just wanted to begin some discussions on where some of these things stood. You have received, or should have received, this is like show and tell, a copy of the Health Department's annual report. A lot of what we included in Alice's resolution is in here and describes it quite well. Our next meeting is the 14th of July, Bastille Day, and just wanted to let you... It's not funny, Nate.
I know. It's a very monumental occasion in history.
Expect you to be there.
Yes.
With the French flag.
Yes.
And with that, I think I'll end it.
Except that you have a couple of resolutions.
Oh, wait a minute. We have a file in the office, Karen? Of. So if you have missed the annual report, you're welcome to pick one up there, or at least look at it. Yes, I have two resolutions. Resolution B, authorization to accept and administer the Community Solutions for Transportation Grant, Department of Social Services, and I so move.
Is there a second? Duly seconds.
This is simply a renewal. We've had this grant before, and this is the one that provides some funding for individuals that are in need of... we have cards that we give them for gas as well as for transportation bus passes, and it's a we were successful in getting this grant a second time.
Any questions? Okay, ready to vote then? Resolution B. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
Thank you. Resolution C. You should have received the revised copy in your red folder tonight, and I'll explain what the two changes are. This is allocation of 2006 Federal Job Access and Reverse Commute Grant. That's the JARC money. Among Tompkins County, TCAT, and other parties. And I so move.
Second. Jim seconds that one.
Thank you. We received quite a chunk of change several years ago. It was about $540,000. And of that, there's a remaining $166,000 that we need to spend. And this all goes through the county's allocation process. ITCTC has already vetted, it's been vetted there. And the list that you see in the resolution is how we're spreading the money out. Everything is transportation related. And there are benchmarks that Dwight described to us with regard to reporting so that we can totally justify how we're spending this money. And most of it's been spent already, but this is the remaining piece. The two changes, you notice we had to move about $2,300 out of the third line, which is in the block, DSS, the city van, Ithaca dispatch piece. We had to reduce that, and we moved it to the Ithaca car share program. That's up by the same amount. This was simply a mathematical error. When we put the original block together, we were looking at a prior version of the ITCTC spreadsheet, and that reflected the old numbers. And when we went back, we realized we blew it. I'm sorry about that. So we just corrected the math, is essentially what it is.
Any questions, comments? Ready to vote. All in favor on the revised resolution C, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Frank.
You bet. Thanks, Martha. Okay.